Welcome to News Tribune on Tap. I'm Gary Castor, managing editor at the Jefferson City News Tribune and host of News Tribune on Tap, a weekly conversation about news and issues in Jefferson City that matter to you. Today's special guest is Spencer Allen. Hello, Spencer.
Hey, Gary. Good to chat with you.
Great to have you here. So for those who may not know, Spencer is the principal at Helias Catholic High School. So we invited Spencer in to talk about artificial intelligence. We had a story about some interesting things that Helias is doing with the technology. So let's start out with what's just a basic definition of AI?
So we call this AI commonly when it's probably a glorified term for what we have right now. And so you'll hear things like ChatGPT or Claude or Perplexity, other programs like that, also called large language models. And GPT stands for Generative Pre-trained Transformer. And so basically what it means is they have trained ChatGPT and models like it on just vast volumes of data. And then they've released it. And so what's happening is if you ask it a question, it is making a mathematical calculation of the answer you're most likely looking for. And okay. For every single word it puts out, it's doing a new mathematical calculation. So the better you phrase your question, the better the response is going to be. There's several forms out there. There are the language models like ChatGPT that will help you write a paper, help you think through a topic that you want to write about, help you brainstorm on what you're going to have for supper. I told it the other day, all the ingredients in my refrigerator.
Yeah.
And it came up with a delicious chicken salad recipe. Honestly, the best that we've had. It said, well, try this. So there's also image generators like DALL-E and others that you say, I'm looking for something like this. It will create either a photorealistic image. Okay. It will create something. You want it to look like an impressionist painting. It will create that. You can have Slido is one. Gamma is another that will create PowerPoint slides for you. Slideshows. Okay. A lot of applicability for this generative type of program. That we're commonly calling AI.
Okay. So what are some of the ways that AI can be used in the real world?
Sure. So both good and bad, right? Okay. Like with any tool. And this is one of the things that as schools we have to wrestle with. For one, there's a lot of things that as professionals are part of our job, but really keep us from doing the meat of what we went into that job for, right? And so there's reason to be hopeful that these types of programs will take care of those things for us. So as the instructional leader at Helias, my primary role is to be in the classrooms, working with teachers, working with students. The more I'm at my desk, the more I'm not doing what I'm really called to do. So I certainly have an administrative assistant who is excellent, but there might be tasks that I can use this program for to help to facilitate that, to get me to where I need to be. So it can be useful for a lot of things like that, and that's applicable to a large number of professions. Other places it's being used in the real world is there's a group of scientists who a few months ago discovered through AI an antibiotic for a really hard-to-cure bacterial infection, because we know that the bacteria are getting resistant to antibiotics, and it found a combination of elements, chemicals, science-y terms here, right, that it's not my area, but I know they discovered an antibiotic through the use of this type of tool. So that's helpful, right? We can find cures. We can find solutions to problems. The challenge is that the more it gets good at helping us find solutions and grow efficient, the more the bad actors can use it or means that are harmful to our culture and society. So you all are in the journalism business, and people sometimes worry about something called a techpocalypse, where people who are trying to monetize or push a political agenda or social agenda might have an AI just crank out thousands of fake news stories a day and populate the internet. So suddenly, if you don't know how to discern, you're looking around on the internet, you don't know what's valid, what's useful. There's a concern, right? These types of programs just do what you tell them to do, but they don't always do it in the way you predict will happen. So we have to get very good about making sure that we know how to orchestrate them in a way that is useful, but not harmful. So there's ways that it manifests itself in the real world, and there's probably others too. People can use it as a way to think through ideas. I just need a brainstorming partner. Or I journal by typing, someone might say. They could put all of that into maybe a generator like ChatGPT and say, sum up my journals in the last 3 weeks. What trends do you see in my life? Like, what do I need to focus on in improvement? What are some areas that are going well? These are just hypotheticals, but there's a lot of applicability including figuring out what your supper is going to be tonight.
Sure, sure. So in a school setting, how can it be useful as an educational tool?
So we've thought about that a lot. We have an AI task force, several teachers who are helping to look through the research that's coming out and think through applicability. And first off, when this ChatGPT 3.5 dropped late November, the first thing that went into the minds of many educators was students are going to cheat.
Yeah.
And that's a real thing. And so we have to talk about how do we mitigate that? And so one of the answers is there are certainly catchers out there, like AI checkers, that are not incredibly reliable. And there are a few alternatives that might be more reliable than others. But it turns out that just really good teaching is the answer.
Hmm.
So if I'm a teacher and I assign a paper on Monday and it's due on Friday, chances are I'm going to spend my weekend grading something that was written by algorithms. But if I'm having the students write it in class, and I'm coaching them in class, I'm crouching next to this young lady who's writing a paper, and I'm pointing out what she does really, really well. I'm pointing out very individualized to her areas where she can improve. A, it's very hard to just copy and paste a whole essay that way because the teacher's always walking around.
Mm-hmm.
B, it's immediate real-time feedback, which is powerful. It's teaching the way really good coaches coach, which is hands-on, individualized feedback. So there's a great response. So on one hand, we have to know how to hold off one of the challenges and threats. On the others, it's a great way to individualize instruction. I gave some examples that were in the story of a foreign language teacher might use it. I'm actually practicing some Spanish that I'm learning.
Hmm.
So every day I'll take about 15 minutes, maybe in the evening, and just chat with it. In Spanish, it'll tell me what I did wrong. Oh, you should have used this declension, this case. And it will then respond back in dialogue. And we just have this conversation going. So that's very immersive. You could put a rough draft of an essay in and get feedback, freeing up that teacher to do multiple drafts of a paper. Because
right.
as you all know, as journalism, writing is not about the product. It's about the process, right?
Yes.
We're helping our young people get that. I'm studying for a test. My daughter is in college and she's taking a tough class. And I said, you know, you ought to just put the topic in to ChatGPT or whichever one you're using and say, have a conversation with me about this economics topic or start throwing questions at me. So it's a review buddy at 9 o'clock at night when she might not be able to talk a study friend over to help her.
Yeah.
The other big challenge we have in schools is the one we alluded to earlier, which is that if schools are not talking about this and implementing it, we have the real challenge that the job market is going to change drastically. We know that automation changes things in the real world. So some jobs are going to disappear. Some are going to look very different 5 years from now than they do right now. So I think the more that we see automation and technology grow in sophistication, the more soft skills are important, helping our young people do what maybe they've been really challenged on with as much as some of them seem stuck on screens, which is work on conversational skills and developing empathy, developing critical thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And the machines still need to be kept in check. So we need to send young people out who have strong understanding of the technology, strong problem-solving skills to help to guide these tools if they go to work for an organization or business and find that they have incorporated AI, as many have. That's why we're seeing jobs advertised for six figures for prompt engineers at big businesses, because
mm-hmm.
they know that is the future. And we need to help them to also be ready for maybe a challenge to their pursuit of self-actualization, because the changing job market will threaten that. So if I wanted to go off and be a graphic designer, I'm really good at art.
Mm-hmm.
And I find out that there's an image generation program that a business will use that costs substantially less than I would charge. That's a challenge to the fact that I chose a profession that is tapping into my creative energies. And that's going to be an existential crisis for some young people as they head into the workforce.
Sure.
And we have the challenge of helping them to learn to find that self-actualization and just being the people they are in their communities. So all of that, and then as we talked about in the article, this is a great time to talk about ethics.
Right.
I'm at a Catholic school, but even if I were at a public school, it would be the same conversation, which is, I mentioned that you or I might use this tool to help us with our tasks,
mm-hmm.
to take something off your plate so you can focus on great content in the News Tribune. That's different than assignments we might give a young person that are based on their formation. And so a young person using ChatGPT to write a paper is, A, there's an academic integrity issue because that's not what the assignment was, but B, the reason today I can write well and the reason I can sometimes speak well in front of people is because through my teachers teaching me how to write and do assignments that are related to expressing the creative or the critical sides of my mind, I was formed into the adult I am today.
Right.
And young people who take the shortcuts are really shortchanging themselves more than anybody in this equation. And so that's a conversation we have to be having in the classes.
Well, I would even argue in the community, right?
100%.
Every tool has a purpose, right? Yes. Every tool can be misused.
Yes.
As you were talking, I'm sitting there thinking of a hammer. You know,
exactly.
A hammer can be very constructive,
right?
But it also can be very destructive how you use it.
It's all how you use the tool.
Yeah.
And this one just has probably more temptations than a lot of tools we encounter, so that we need to ramp up our dialogue even more so.
Yeah. So how do you think that discussion's going with students?
Yeah, I think it's going really well. Just today and yesterday, actually, I'm in classes every day, and a couple of classes that were talking about AI that I was not even aware of. And so it was a really good, healthy dialogue I saw yesterday, a conversation with the class where they listened to a couple of podcasts. I might recommend this one for their next lesson. But they listened to a couple of podcasts, talked about the elements that went in and the research that went into them.
Mm-hmm.
And then what happened next was they used a program called Perplexity, which is different than ChatGPT in that it is live, real-time, hooked up to the internet. Mm-hmm. ChatGPT is just going on its pre-trained information. Perplexity will just look something up. And the problem, though, is what it looks up and provides you is not always accurate. So they moved this into a conversation of first showing the young people how there's a lot of inaccuracies here.
Mm-hmm.
Good stuff, a lot of inaccuracies. They moved that into a lesson on validating your sources, finding integrity in your sources, and then that was the activity that the students did with whatever they generated through the use of Perplexity. Another teacher had a conversation with them that it was really related to the task versus formation. They were working on a paper, and the teacher explained to them, sometimes when you're brainstorming, you have a friend sit down with you and you two brainstorm together.
Right.
We see that when people write like shows that we watch on television. It's rarely one person writing. It's a bunch of people around a table throwing mm-hmm. ideas out.
Yeah.
We don't always have that friend. So he said, so this is a great time for you all to work with each other or pull up one of the LLMs and just start to have a conversation about what you're thinking to do with your paper and ask it through your prompt to interact with you, suggest ideas or challenge the ideas you throw out. And you will generate some ideas that then you take and you write the paper.
Mm-hmm.
That's your paper, but you had a brainstorming partner.
And right.
That's real world. We would
do
it with a living person sitting next to us. We would use a tool with it as well. I think the conversations are going well. Right when this first came out, we had a few instances of finding some things that the young people had written that we suspected and confirmed in a few cases were written
mm-hmm.
by algorithms. We're seeing substantially less than that. And the teachers are more on guard, not less on guard.
Yeah.
So I think that the way that we are shaping instruction and the conversations we're having, whether it lasts beyond high school, I can't answer, but I think at least during the time we have us, hopefully we're making an impact.
Sure. So let's talk about that idea of an impact. So as a parent yourself, what are some tips you would offer parents, maybe kids that are emerging to the high school level, as well as those who are headed off to college and thereabouts? What are some suggestions you would have regarding how to best support and encourage your kids' use of AI?
So I think one of them is what we discussed earlier, which is teachers can only do so much in developing those soft skills, those social skills.
Mm-hmm.
That's going to fall on me and my wife with our five kids, right?
Yep.
And so the more we do things that engage us in the community where this type of technology is more or less a non-factor, getting our young people involved in charity work, community service, that sort of thing, the more they serve the community, which is great by itself, but the more they also learn the soft skills of interacting with other people with empathy, with compassion, with conviction, whatever it might be. So that's key. Secondly, these tools can be great equalizers, especially if you have a young person who is struggling in a particular area. There are so many ways to use these devices to tutor that don't cost you what a tutor might cost.
Mm.
Right. And so this summer, being an educator, my kids are cursed with the reality that we don't just take off when school ends. We do some stuff during the summer.
Sure.
So I wanted to help one of my sons, Jack, who's a freshman this year, learn how to look critically at political and social types of ideas. So I gave him kind of a hot button topic.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, today, I want you to debate ChatGPT on this topic. I want you to pay specific attention to the arguments that it makes. Jot them down, whatever you have to do. I didn't tell him why, but he went ahead and took a position, argued it. The next day, I said, great, we're going to do the same thing. Now you're arguing the other side of that position,
mm-hmm.
and you're trying to
yeah.
defend that we should pass this legislation or not. And so there's an example that during summer, you can use tools for purposes like that. study aids, like I mentioned earlier, you'd also have my younger kids, I will typically have them do Khan Academy, which gives them a great tutorial during the summer on, if they're going into seventh grade, they'll do a Khan Academy class on seventh grade math. Well, the developers at Khan Academy are incorporating AI even more so than they ever have. And so that's going to become a more powerful tool. Mm-hmm. But it's a great way to kind of bridge the learning loss gap that we see during summer, which is without a parent necessarily knowing how to teach material, the tools are there and they're usually free. Mm-hmm. That they can say, hey, guys, from 9 to 11 every day, this is where you sit at the kitchen table and you do some good stuff, and then you can do whatever you want with the rest of your day. To continue, because they are the first and best educators, parents are also the primary ones to continue having those conversations about ethical use of the tools at hand.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So for those that want to venture into this, what would you suggest to them as to how to get started?
I'll give the crash course I give people on effective prompt writing.
Okay.
And this is a great tip. When I do presentations, which are typically an hour and a half, I have time to really go deep into prompt writing, but I'm going to give the best tip for someone who doesn't have time or to remember this all or whatever, or a pen to jot it down. First off, sign up for ChatGPT or Claude or Perplexity just and sit down and experiment with it.
Mm-hmm.
Your quality will improve based on the quality of your prompt, what you tell it to do. So there's all kinds of guides for writing a good prompt. Tell ChatGPT to take on a persona. You are a professor of economics and I want you to do, and it'll just take that role. Tell it the context. Limit it. Say, I want your response to be 2 paragraphs. You can type as much as you want. Professional mm-hmm. prompt writers, their prompts are 100, 150 words. Doesn't have to be that. It can be 20, 25. But if you don't know how to do it, here's the way you can do it without remembering any of that. You sit down and say, I would like to help you plan out my vacation to Florida. Start out by asking me 15 questions you need to have answered to help me with this. And it'll just start asking you questions. Yeah, what do you and your family like to do for fun?
Mm-hmm.
What types of foods do you all like to eat? And we used it to plan our vacation this summer. And I put in a packing list and it shot a packing list that we used to check off. We talked about how we bring a lot of meals along so that we can spend our money on doing fun stuff and not going out to eat all of the time. And it mm-hmm. put together a menu for us. Gave it the route and it suggested maybe some things to do to break up that long drive. It's a really powerful tool there. And so the best answer is just sit down and start playing with it. You'll see that it will produce really, really good stuff and it'll produce really, really silly stuff. When I started experimenting, I just said, write a poem. I just wanted to really challenge this. Write a poem where you compare my love for my wife to slime mold. Like, that sounds ridiculous because I wanted to give it the most ridiculous comparison right. I could. And it wrote right. a beautiful poem about how that love grows and expands and the tendrils hold us together, right?
Did it impress her?
Uh-huh. And I had it write jokes and I had to do many of the assignments I've seen my teachers doing. One of the teachers has the kids rewrite a story from Chaucer's Canterbury Tales and rewrite it in modern day and rewrite it as a script. So I put that in and it wrote it in modern day as a script and it was really well done. That's when it hit home to me that this is serious stuff.
Sure.
So yeah, just sit down and play with it. And you know, there's a good chance you're going to get addicted. I don't sit down and play with it as much anymore because the novelty wears off, but it's very, very useful and a lot of practical tasks. And the discussion needs to move to that beyond just the academic integrity issue, which, like I said, can be answered by great teaching.
Right.
When I told a relative of mine and someone I work with that I was going to give some talks on it, they asked me, what are you pro AI or are you against AI? And as I've answered in both instances, this is not a value statement to say we need to talk about this. This is something that is here.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not going anywhere. And once the young people leave our schools, they will interact with it, either yep. personally or in their jobs.
Right.
There's no value judgment of good or bad. Just it's a reality that we need to know. Just like once upon a time, people had to adjust to the fact that the Industrial Revolution was changing everything around them.
Mm-hmm.
This is just happening much more quickly and much more off the radar, because if you're not on a computer, you're really not interacting with it that
right.
much. But it's happening and it's changing our culture. So.
Sure. Well, and it's a discussion right now. Obviously, recently, President Biden suggested Congress and the administration and presumably the legislature here in Missouri will also be discussing safeguards for mm-hmm. AI. As someone who has used AI extensively, do you have any suggestions on what, if any, role government should have in regulating it?
Yeah, that's a hard question. I guess I haven't thought long and hard enough about what specific role government should have. I just know that the challenge to that is, I know that several months ago we saw a lot of chatter about putting a pause on the development of AI.
Mm.
And we could decide to do that as a nation.
Sure.
There's a lot of countries in the world and a lot of countries with resources. And unless they all sign on to something like that, which is unlikely, we're going to see that someone will always fund the progress and the research. We see this with, like, for instance, cloning.
Yep.
We could take a hard stance on cloning, but that doesn't prevent this country over here with money to fund it because there's profit in it for them, right? So I think that if there's ways, we do have to have real discussions, though. One of the things we talk about at school is data protection, how to use it without it compromising sensitive data, how to not include stuff in what we're putting into this program that belongs to a third party that gives student data or school data. Well, that's going to be very important on a bigger scale, which is how are we protecting data as a nation? How are we protecting security? If we use AI for our grid, if we use it as I think it's already being used to direct airlines, air traffic control, and all of that, how do we safeguard there is probably, I guess, if I had a concern, the biggest concern.
Yeah.
And hopefully we put them in there for a reason. Hopefully that the powers that be have the right people advising them that that's where their efforts are being directed.
Sure. All right. Well, Spencer, we appreciate you spending some time with us on this subject.
And, yeah, it was fun to talk about. Thank you.
We look forward to seeing what's next.
All right. I do too. Thank you.
Thanks for listening. You can find News Tribune on tap at newstribune.com, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, and Google Play.